because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
J.R., we're going to send off our delegations to the Republican National Convention next week and the Democrats this week after.
Yes.
So Charles Franklin gave us some pretty good insights. So I'm going to spend some time talking about what Franklin reported. Yeah, he said Clinton's up 43-37 and Feingold's up 48-41 and Johnson. But let's take a look as we send our delegates off to Cleveland and Philadelphia, okay? Okay, first, his total survey of 801... Well, his point, pre-convention splits in both parties. Do you have a favorable opinion of Trump? 29% yes, 63% no. Clinton, 36% yes, no, 58%. Thoughts on that, JR?
I actually had expected her numbers to drop a little bit because remember this poll went in the field on Thursday,
yep.
2 days after the FBI announcement that she'd been extremely careless with her use of private email.
And it could have been hacked by hostile actors.
What's amazing is how baked in the opinions are of Hillary Clinton in some ways. I've been asking people about this the last couple of days. Like, so is there anything you say about Hillary Clinton that would make her less popular than she is now? And apparently the answer is no, because if you're talking about, again, an FBI investigation in which polls show a majority or plurality of Americans think she should have been charged with a crime, that happened and you're still only the same basically margin you were a month before, that tells you she is baked in the cake is what people think of her. The same time, so is Trump a lot of ways. Yep. I mean, Franklin's word was tumultuous for the month that both of them had, and neither really moved. I think Trump's favorable opinion moved by like a point or something like that.
Yeah.
People have made their minds up about Trump and Clinton, and that's kind of not good for them right now.
Yeah, and then the next part of that, again, there are surveys that the full 801 registered voters comfortable with his president. Trump, 29% yes. 63% no, Clinton 36% yes, 58% no. Any PSs on that?
No, again, not a lot of change. It underscores, though, how unpopular the two of them are.
The most unpopular candidates
we've ever seen. And Republicans I talk to are like gnashing their teeth that if we had anybody else but Trump, we'd be beating the pants off of her. And Dems are going, keep it up, Donald. You know, I mean, that you know, she could, there's a way that you can see that Hillary Clinton with, if she coalesces the Bernie Sanders people, if she kind of gets that she could have a really decent number.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a tough hill for her to climb when the independents don't like her right now.
Yeah. So then we look at what Mr. Franklin's survey. And then when we go deeper into the 326 Republicans and lean Republicans, first of all, is the Republican Party united now? 6%, which is a drop of 15 mm-hmm. from June. Divided now but united on November 8th, the general election, 29%. Will still be divided on November 8th, 61%. 6 in 10 Republicans and lean Republicans in Wisconsin surveyed by Mr. Franklin will be divided on November 8th.
And what's interesting is you're seeing a little bit of, in that poll, public enthusiasm to vote bop back up a little bit, but you're still seeing issues, and both parties have this, a division within the ranks of with their nominee. Now with Hillary Clinton, it's because Bernie Sanders, there's still a big Bernie faction, if you will. For Trump, he's now had the nomination basically wrapped up since early May,
mm-hmm.
and you're still not seeing everybody come home. Now, we still have 3.5-4 months left. Maybe they get there come November. Mark Belling, for example, talk show host of Milwaukee.
Reluctantly.
Did not take back the buffoon comments about Donald Trump, but said he's better than Hillary Clinton. So that's the first talk show host of Milwaukee to kind of come
Mr.
back.
Sykes has not been dragged across that line.
He's still on MSNBC talking about Donald Trump all the time, you know. So you're still seeing, but maybe these guys start to come home in southeastern Wisconsin. That might help Donald Trump, but he's got a problem with the party not being behind him right now.
And then, just to make the point that you've been making, when Wisconsin Republicans were asked should the national convention nominate Trump, 59%, someone else 39%. So that's just what you've been saying.
And that effort was basically snuffed out in the Rules Committee. That's not going to happen at this point, so
right.
Trump is going to be...
There's no conscious clause vote on the full of the...
It was very unlikely to begin with, but they basically made sure it's not going to be a debate on the floor, which would have been a nightmare, by the way, for Republicans to have the entire convention hall debating, should we be able to, you know, vote our conscience? That's not a good optic, trying to project, you know, an image of a unified party. And to go deeper on a tangent, when your vice presidential pick is Mike Pence, who is kind of seen as like helping to shore up the base, when you're shoring up your base in mid-July of the presidential year, that's not the best sign either.
And that's interesting. Pence spent 12 years in the U.S. Mm-hmm. House, record as a conservative. Then he goes and be governor, and he has to notify Indiana state government by noon today that he's not going to be.
It's not a swing
re-election.
State.
No.
I saw some crazy fact that Republicans haven't won the presidency without somebody from the South on the ticket since 1928 or something like that. You're going to check that number, but it's really a unique ticket that we're seeing for Republicans this year.
And the two states that have the most manufacturing jobs in this nation are Wisconsin and Indiana. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting. Okay, Wisconsin is going to have five speakers if you include National Chairman Reince Priebus, but the ones that were announced just this week, of course, Speaker Ryan, mm-hmm. Governor Walker, mm-hmm. Who had been one of 17 running for the presidency,
yes.
which we've discussed. Why Sean Duffy and why David Clark?
Duffy, first, he has been behind Trump. He kind of started sending signals before the primary even. Trump won his district in May at the convention, state convention. He was probably the most vocal of the delegation in urging people to get behind Trump. So that makes some sense. And by the way, Duffy represents a district that people think Trump might do well.
Well, also, is it worth noting, J.R., that he's married to Rachel Campos Duffy, mm-hmm. who's she's an Hispanic, a former TV star.
Yes.
They have six children.
Own presence on conservative media as well, at least six now, if not eight.
Okay.
The brood keeps growing with them. With David Clark, you know, he's registered as a Democrat, runs as a Democrat, but
yes.
he's been the go-to African-American voice among conservatives for right-wing media outlets and conservative talk radio, Fox News. I mean, he has a real presence, if you will, with a law and order theme. And by the way, at one of the speeches he gave sometime this year, says everything he can to help Donald Trump get elected. So,
Clark is auditioning for a position in a Trump administration if he's elected president?
I don't know. It's a good question. What his next move is not clear, politically speaking.
He could have run for mayor, passed that up.
Passed
could have run for county exec. So
passed that up.
So he's been kind of marching in place as sheriff, but he mm-hmm. clearly has his ambitions.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, now let's talk about the Democrats, although they meet not next week, but the week after in Philadelphia. Same questions. Is the Democratic Party united now? 34%. Divided now, but united on November 8th, 34%. Will still be divided on November 8th. The figure was 61% for the Republicans. It's 28%. What a significant difference for the Dems.
It's more down to the Bernie people at this point. So if you look at the next number you have in the graphic, Clinton 50, Sanders 47, what Franklin talked about was that it's the first time they've surveyed Democrats in his polls where a majority of Dems wanted Clinton
yes.
over Sanders. Remember, he won
right.
our primary handedly in April, so people seem to be moving toward Clinton. Now, the thing is, though, they're not quite all there. Another little subtext to this is the theory of the Sanders voter going to Donald Trump is not really materializing. I think it's like 9%, 10%, somewhere in that ballpark of people who want Sanders, they're going to vote for Trump. So that's not really, you're not really seeing a big movement of those folks toward Trump, and I don't know if they're going to get there.
And Democratic Representative Jonathan Brostoff of Milwaukee has started a
GoFundMe
page to go to Philadelphia as a delegate for Bernie Sanders.
Right? One of like almost two dozen Sanders delegates. I mean, you know, this is something happening across the country. Sanders delegates saying, you know, help me pay for my way to Philadelphia. Talked to the new Ethics Commission. They said not a problem with it because it's available to everybody, if you will, but
right.
we recommend public officials to channel those donations through their campaign accounts to be on the safe side.
Right. And then, so the takeaway from Charles Franklin, and I want to ask you if you agree with it or you want to elaborate on it, both parties still have big divisions that the conventions could either widen or narrow and heal. Any PSs?
Yeah, he said there's an appetite for somebody else in both parties, so that's an issue. And again, back to the point of the numbers seem to be baked in for the two of them right now that they've got, they need some work, if you will, to improve their numbers. Now, the question always, every campaign is, do you spend the money to improve your positives or to drive down your other opponent's net positives? You know,
yeah.
And it seems like Clinton's going after Trump right now in a number of factors.
Okay, we didn't do a graphic on this, but let's talk about Governor Walker's approval rating, because it was at 38% in the July poll. And Franklin seemed to say that the governor hasn't recovered much.
No.
There was a bump back, a bump up slightly, but he hasn't.
At the
he
March,
hasn't cracked 40.
At the March presentation, the governor got up to 43% in that poll. It was done right before the April primary. Republicans were more jazzed up to vote in that primary than Democrats were. And Franklin said, it's a question if this is the beginning of the recovery or a blip.
Right.
This week he said, we have the answer, and it was a blip because he sunk back below 40, two polls in a row now. It seems like, one, running for president damaged the brand for Scott Walker in Wisconsin, and two, This also was happening while the budget that he did last year came out. All those fights were transportation and things he wanted to do and cuts to education. UW, he proposed $300 million. They ended up getting $250. Those things weren't very popular, and Walker's not recovered yet. Now, we're still in July of an off year. There is time, but the time, or 2 years out, I should say, there is time, but time is closing. And the question for Walker is, one, can he improve his numbers? You know, two, does it matter? If the Dems don't have a strong opponent for him, you can win. If you're not popular, you can still win if you can tear the other guy down. Okay. So,
let's circle back a little bit. What are you going to listen for in the speeches by Wisconsin speakers next week? I'm going to Paul Ryan, I'm going to talk about whether he talks about the House agenda and how much he talks about Trump. I think that Governor Walker is going to say the Wisconsin, you know, comeback. Sean Duffy's going to say he's basically going to repeat what he said at the state convention, which, boy, a cheerleader for Trump, and nobody knows what David Clark is going to say.
No, I'm sure that David Clark is probably, you know, he has made made a presence on conservative media going after President Obama and Hillary Clinton. I'm sure he'll serve in that role again. Sean Duffy, yeah, he's been pretty positive about Trump and what he can offer the, you know, people, especially in his district. With Walker, the question is, how do you use this speech? Do you use it like Chris Christie did in 2012, or became all about you, or you lay out a vision for conservative leadership that everybody can get behind at the convention, or do you become a full-throated Trump cheerleader? You know, what do you do? For Paul Ryan, I think he had a weekly news conference yesterday and said, I haven't started writing my speech yet, I'll worry about that later, but I'm sure he will talk about the House GOP agenda, and the tie will be Donald Trump gives us an opportunity to pass this agenda and change the trajectory we're on right now. That's going to be the tie, I think.
One final note. There was a lot of speculation in the Capitol press room yesterday. Why is Walker visiting the Iowa, South Carolina, and New Hampshire delegations?
Oh, 2020.
Okay.
Keep his options open. I mean, in politics, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, if you look at, like, one thing I hate about the polls is kind of a tangent, but, you know, you read these polls, people say, if the election were today, so-and-so. That's not what the polls are saying. Look at them for trends, but that said, the trends are not that great for Donald Trump in a lot of ways. Now, Hillary Clinton's got her issues, but we're looking at the environment going, okay, it looks like maybe a bad fall for Donald Trump. If that happens, and it's still a big if, Republicans are looking for somebody to lead them going forward. Governor Walker's not said for sure he's going to run 2018. He's pushed it back till after the budget. There may be an opportunity for him to make a comeback and run in 2020. Now, wow. All those things are big ifs. There are a lot of levers to push between now and then. Right. But never close the door in politics. You know, like your reporter, never throw a phone number away. You're never really going to need it.
That's right. Our governor, the Energizer Bunny, right?
Yeah. He loves to. The guy loves to be on the trail. He loves to campaign.
Yeah, he does. Okay, the Ethics Commission named an administrator, Brian Bell. He'll be paid $92.5. He's had been with the State Department of Safety and Professional Services. Before that, the Government Accountability Board. And he's a captain and company commander in the U.S. Army Reserve. And the Ethics Commission picked Peg Lautenschlager, former Attorney General, who had a little ethics problem in 2004.
The state car and driving drunk and all that kind of good stuff? Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, what's interesting is, one, the conservatives who pushed hard for the demise of the GAB are kind of going, wait a second, it's the same characters just being rearranged. Like, what's going on? But that's the reality. That's kind of the reality that people talked about before this change was made of. There are only so many people really interested in being part of a ethics or elections commission or a GAB. You're picking from a small pool of people. So you're going to get people who have ties to the GAB, and the people who are running it, Mike Haas, over
elections commission.
They have ties. I mean, and part of it makes sense because if you think about it, they made this transition in the middle of election year. How do you completely bring in new people with no experience in that environment and have them successfully run an election? That's be tough to do. So you have that going on. And with Peg, there's all this conservative outrage that she got the nod because she paid a fine for using the car at the time. But that's the way it goes. Drew by lots of which party's nominees would get, you know, the first shot at being chair, and that's what you end up with.
And Lautenschlager, yeah, that 2004 error, a significant error, but she's a former U.S. attorney, former member of the Assembly,
yes,
and former AG.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Kudos to WisPolitics for reporting how departing Senator Rick Gudex found a way to dispense $64,080 to his fellow members of the Republican Party. This just fascinates me, JR. First of all, $50,000 to the committee to reelect Senate Republicans, $2,000 each to his good friend, one of two GOP candidates in the 18th Senate District, Dan Fan. Final Act County GOP, his fellow senators Harsdorf, Olson, Winnebago County GOP, $1,000 each to his reps, Thiesfeld and Schrah, and $1,000 to U.S. Senator Ron Johnson, $500 to the congressional campaign of Senator Frank Lissay, who's running in the 8th CD, and finally $580 to Congressman Glenn Grothman. I'm glad you did the story. Why'd you do the story?
Oh, it's just interesting to see what these guys do. When you leave office, you have several options. You can return the contributions. You can make a charitable donation. And there are a couple charitable donations that Goodex made to organizations.
You bought
tickets
to the NRA, I think, $500.
You can use that. Yeah. You can keep the account alive and use it for political purposes. I mean, there are a lot of former lawmakers that still have their accounts going and use them for things. Make contributions once in a while, buy tickets for events, those kinds of things. So it's just interesting to watch where does the money go once you're not going to run for election anymore. And, you know, in Goodex, one thing about him was they knew he was going to be a top target. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure a lot of money pumped into his campaign account came from being directed by CSRS, like, hey, we need to help this guy out. He's our top, you know, protect in 2016.
Yep.
Now he's not there anymore. It makes sense kind of some ways to kind of send it back where it came from, if you will. But it's not going back to the donors, obviously.
It is, right. It is interesting. So they pretty much, an outgoing legislator can just say, okay, all my friends, here are some gifts, yeah. Right?
And here's the other thing. Remember, with the new campaign finance rules that we have, contributions from PACs, they're unlimited now. Or from a party to a candidate, those are unlimited. So then you're talking about money you couldn't transfer that size before, but we can now with the new limits that we have.
You also reported on a gift that Goodex didn't make, but explain to me how Justice Prosser's legal debts were what am I trying to say?
How they're going to be paid off?
Yes, that's what I'm trying
to
say.
So Justice Prosser has had two accounts, actually, for the last 3 years. One of them was original
campaign. He leaves office at the end of
July. July 31st.
Yes.
Original campaign account became his kind of recount fund, or legal defense fund. Legal defense fund. He also had a recount fund, because remember, his last 7,000 votes went to recount. Well, long story short, he ended up with a couple $100,000 in legal bills left over. And over the course of time, he was knocking out some of those bills, but he's been stuck with like $46,000, $50,000 for the last year and a half or so. April 7th, the state GOP made a $25,000 in-kind contribution to Prosser's campaign account now for legal service, or the fundraising services of Dan Morris, longtime GOP fundraiser. That was almost 3 weeks of the day before Prosser announced he's not going to he's going to retire 5 years into his 10-year term. Now, one, state GOP has been playing a bigger role in Supreme Court races lately, helped out Rebecca Bradley a great deal, I think probably her biggest donor, helped out James Daly against Ann Walsh Bradley, I think also Rogensack helped her a little bit, so they're playing a bigger role. This is part of an effort to help pay off his debts. It's obvious that Prosser's having a problem on his own doing it because, look, if you're a Supreme Court justice, you can't personally solicit campaign contributions, right?
Yes.
Two, you've had campaigns going on this spring for Supreme Court, last spring for Supreme Court. They're gearing up for the 2016 elections. It's a hard window to raise money in. He needs help. This is the GOP saying, okay, we're going to help give you a final push to pay this off before you walk out the door. Now, the question is it appropriate? You know, what's going on with that? And, you know, the party, Democratic Party, slammed it, saying this is kind of a little odd that you have a guy. Well, especially payback for a guy who's been your vote. You know, your ally, if you will, in the Supreme Court. And well, Wisconsin now, very critical of conservatives on the court, it thinks it's a little bit fishy. Like all the timing of all these things happening back and forth. Interesting side note, one of the attorneys who worked on Prosser's recount, Dan Kelly, who's now a candidate.
For the Supreme Court.
The Supreme Court.
Yes.
And all the debt left is legal bills. So they're trying to pay that off before he leaves office in a few weeks.
Well, it's interesting. In Justice Prosser, you have a public servant for about three decades.
Hmm?
He's a former DA. Then he was a longtime member of the Assembly. Then he was Speaker of the Assembly. Then there was a short interim where he was on the Tax Commission.
Yes.
Then he was appointed to the Supreme Court. So ending a career, a public service career of almost three decades, and he still owes $46,000 in legal debts?
Yeah, and you know, it's kind of an interesting dynamic of all this. Was go back to the 2011 Supreme Court race. Remember, it's the one race we've had that was funded by this public financing operation that
yes.
ended up not working the way they wanted it
right.
to. But Prosser was limited on how much money he could raise. So if you were in a normal situation, he would have raised a lot of money before the race and had a he was forced to go out and raise. Now, nice quirk from his state law is when you're in a recount, you have all into donations. So that money poured in real quick. But once the recount was over, what's your argument for, as your, if you're Dave Prosser, to give me more money? Right. How do you do that? And for the last 18 months, the answer has been not, it's not been an effective one. There has been very little activity in his account since
then. While we're on the subject, do you expect an appointment to fill Justice Prosser's seat soon?
I think the vibe I'm getting in the Gov's office, they're waiting until later in July. He is in Des Moines this weekend for the National Governors Association. He goes to Cleveland for the convention. I think he's going to speak on Tuesday. That's tentative. Now, it's Donald Trump's operation, so there are lots of things that are moving pieces, if you will. Right. But I think Tuesday is the day he's going to speak, and he should be out there. He's a delegate. He'll be out there most of the week. So if he's going to be personally involved, I think he did the interviews. That may be in the last week or two with the candidates. But if you're going to have Scott Walker and your appointees side by side, it may not be until a week and a half from now,
okay,
if you will.
All right. No stock picks this week, but we promised an update. How much did Ron Johnson raise in the last quarter?
$2.8 million.
How does he stand then, cash on hand July 1?
So he had $6.4 million. Now, Feingold has not released his number. He raised $4.1 million in that period. He had $6.5 in the bank at the end of March, the last quarter. What's interesting is for Ron Johnson, he is one of the top three or four best Senate Republicans raising money, but they're all being blown away by Russ Feingold. He's just outpacing him. Now, Republicans like to point out that Russ Feingold is going through a lot of money at the same time he's raising a lot of money. But the lesson I learned from Scott Walker is when you rely on small dollar donors, which is what Russ Feingold does and Scott Walker, it takes a lot of money to cultivate them, to build your list, and to hit them up, to get them invested. But once you do, you can hit them up time and time and time again for $25 and $50 and $75, which gives you a bigger pool for donations than relying on the maxed out donor at $2,700 for primary and $2,700 for general.
Okay, but I want to talk about the imbalance. April, May, and June, Senator Johnson raised 2.8, mm-hmm, and Russ Feingold, former senator, raised 4.1. Mm-hmm. Okay, why did I read a headline today, Ron Johnson may go to the convention? What is this may not? What's going on there?
I don't know. It's the dance.
It's the dance
that Ron Johnson continues to do when it comes to Donald Trump. But, you know, I think he's not a delegate, doesn't have to be there. He said he just raised the possibility maybe he'll be out there, so we'll see.
Okay, finally, you reported yesterday that State Senator Leah Buchmeier would like to be the next Secretary of the Department of Health Services.
She and Budget Director Michael Heifetz are two of the top candidates that we're hearing for the position. Now, there are pluses and minuses for, you know, Leah. One, she was a nurse.
Yes.
She's chair of health committee.
Yes.
Been on joint finance. Those are all very good things. By the way, she's been a big Walker backer for a long time. She won his assembly seat after he went to be county executive. She also, though, was one of the leading voices against Family Care 2.0, the overhaul of that program that ended up forcing DHS to pull it back.
Pull it back.
So the question becomes, will you be a team player if you were to get the post? Same time, secretaries tend to lose their independence when they become part of the administration. So there's that. Heifetz, he was a DOA, worked for DOA 10 years with Dean, came back and works, you know, his budget. He knows the budget inside and out. He knows Medicaid, the numbers at least, which is the biggest driver of our issues of the budget. So he's a good numbers pick, if you will.
Yeah.
So that's one of the choices. And they're not to mean nobody else could be picked, but they're the two we're hearing the most about right now in the Capitol.
Okay. Next week, one week from today, let's pick the best lines in the speeches from Ryan and Walker and Duffy and Sheriff Clark, okay?
All right.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for this week.